Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guests this morning on Two Jewish are the Tzofim, Israeli scouts touring America in a performing arts caravan on behalf of Israel. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Shinshiniot, Young Representatives of Israel, Rotem Rappaport, and Ron Benicote. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's now just a couple of days after the summer solstice, longest day of the year here in the Northern Hemisphere. While we Jews have always used a calendar based on the cycles of the moon rather than the sun, a lunar rather than a solar calendar, it would be incorrect to say the sun hasn't played a major role in our own Jewish religious development. And certainly for all other cultures in the world, the sun has always had a central place in their own theologies and their sanctuaries. During a sabbatical trip I took around the world 4 years ago, I visited nearly 150 of the holiest places on earth, spread out over 20 countries all the way around the world, and explored just what originally made those places sacred in the first place. And while there were a variety of common themes among these holy places, ranging from scenic beauty to commanding locations to historic associations, the orientation of the sacred sites to the rising or sometimes the setting sun was almost always one of the reasons they were chosen. That was true on every continent I visited, from Europe to Asia to Africa to Australia to South America, and it was true for every single religious tradition. Everyone keeps at least one eye on the sun when they locate their holiest places for worship, and everyone relates the rays of the rising sun to the presence of the divine here on earth. This may go back to the deepest parts of our evolutionary psychology, to the way in which we sought light and warmth during dark, cold times. But the focus on the sun in religious tradition is just as true of societies that developed in scorching tropical climates like Egypt or Cambodia or Belize, in which the sun may seem like the enemy, as it is in frigid zones like Poland or Finland or Peru, where the rays of the sun provide life-giving warmth and energy. Of course, no matter the ambient temperature in our local climates, it is always true that without the energy of the sun, our earth would be barren of life. Virtually everything needed to grow plants and evolve and sustain life comes from our local star, Sol. So it's understandable why so many religions look to the Shemesh, the sun, as a kind of deity, or at least a representation of divine power and favor. Ancient Egypt, the culture in which our Israelite ancestors often lived, looked at the sun as the most important god, Ra, and had other divine manifestations of the solar disk or its corona, such as Aton. Their temples were all oriented to the east, towards the rising sun. And the sacred sites of the Canaanites and Phoenicians and Philistines and Babylonians also were oriented in the direction of the rising sun. We Jews didn't do this exactly. We faced towards Jerusalem, wherever we were, and while, for exiles living in the west, that meant our synagogues were turned toward the east, the direction of the rising sun, for those Jews living east of Israel, that meant we actually were orienting our temples westward, away from the rising sun. But that's not the whole story. In fact, the very choice of Jerusalem as capital of ancient Israel may very well have been topographical and related to the sun. In the days when the temple stood, prior to the Roman destruction in the year 70, the dawning light of the sun would hit the Mount of Olives first and then spread over the city of Jerusalem. The temple itself faced east, towards the, you guessed it, rising sun, and the daily sequence was that as soon as light indicated the dawning of a new day, Olot HaShachar, the priests and peoples would say the morning Shema aloud, the central statement of God's monotheism. Then the priest would make the morning sacrifice, followed by other offerings, and the day was properly begun. The rounded shape of the city of Jerusalem, a town surrounded by a circle of mountains, is kind of the shape of a cup, if you will, a kind of sacred shape. King David chose Jerusalem as his sacred capital city. He certainly knew the place. He was a shepherd from Bethlehem, just 6 miles away. The temple was faced east towards the rising sun, as I've said, just like Karnak and Luxor, like so many ancient temples. Well, the only other place along the entire range of mountains and hills that form the spine of Israel that has this shape, a cup-like circle of mountains or hills surrounding a town or city, a raised place, is Hebron, which was the original location of the capital of Israel, the place where the tabernacle was located for years, David's first capital. Now, there's also a story in the Babylonian Talmud, found in the works of the Roman Jewish historian Josephus too, about a menorah, a lamp, that Queen Helena of Adiabene, a first-century convert to Judaism, created, or at least donated. It reads in full, "Helena had a golden candlestick made to be placed over the door of the temple. When the sun rose, its rays were reflected from the candlestick, and everybody knew it was time for reading the Shema, that is, beginning the day." That's in the Tractate Yoma in the Babylonian Talmud. What Queen Helena donated was probably not a menorah, a candlestick, in the sense we think of it today, but a brass or golden mirror that reflected the rays of the rising sun into the Holy Temple. That is, we began every day with the light of the rising sun shining into our most sacred space. That is the same beginning point as Stonehenge, Luxor, Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, every temple or shrine oriented to welcome the rays of the sun at its beginning. So, even though we Jews are much more focused on the cycles of the moon in our tradition, the sun played a key role in Judaism too. There's even an obscure Jewish ritual called the Birkat HaChama, the blessing for the sun. It is performed once every 28 years, supposedly at the time the sun returns to the point it was at the very beginning of creation among all the celestial bodies. So, during these long days closest to the summer solstice, it's worth taking a few moments and reflecting on God's creation of the great source of our light and energy, without which we wouldn't be here at all. You could, if you are so inclined, even offer a blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam oseh ma'aseh v'reishit. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who makes the great work of creation. To play us in this morning on this long early summer day, here's Israeli singer Omer Adam singing Modeh Ani, a morning prayer, a poem that says, "I thank you, God, each morning."
מודה אני כל בוקר שהחזרת את נשמתי מודה אני על בגד שנחת על גופי שלא יהיה לי קר אתה שומר עליי מודה אני כל בוקר על האור על עצם היותי מודה אני עליכם שנחת לשולחני שלא אהיה רעב שלא אדע כאב על אין ספור חיוכיי מודה אני על כל כישרונותיי ועל כל שיריי את כולם מקדיש לך דע לך, דע לך, שמודה אני לך. אצעק לך, אדיר שמך, אליך אקרא יה, לך חיי, לך ליבי, לתודתי. מודה אני כל בוקר על כוחי על אבי ועלי מי מודה אני על גשם שנתת בשדותיי לדאוג לאוהביי נתת לי חיי על יום המנוחה מודה אני על שפע וברכה על המשפחה כל כולי רק בזכותך דלך דלך לך שמודה אני לך
That was Israeli singer Omer Adam, Modeh Ani. Our guests this morning are the Madrichim, Yonatan Rigby and Shani Factor, counselors for the Israeli Touring Scout Performing Group, the Tzofim Caravan, coast to coast. They are traveling the U.S. singing and dancing and spreading the joy of Israel here in America. Meet them when we return in a moment on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
To welcome our guests this morning, here's some of the singing of the Tzofim, the Israeli Scouts, Yad B'Yad, Hand in Hand. We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish our guests this morning, Yonatan Rigby and Shani Factor, who are the leaders of the Tzofim Caravan. We'll explain both of those terms in the course of our visit here. Young Israelis who are touring America and connecting with American groups. Boker Tov, welcome.
Thank you. Boker Tov.
So explain for the two Jewish audience what Tzofim really are.
Okay, so Tzofim is basically scouts. It's Israeli scouts. It's not boys and girl scouts like here in America. They are together. It's the largest youth movement in Israel. We have almost 90,000 kids from ages from fourth grade till 12th grade. And yeah, that's about it.
So they do scouting kinds of things. They do outdoor activities. They learn nature skills just like scouts do in America. They learn how to camp, all of the kinds of things that you learn. How does that translate into a caravan of singers and dancers and performers in a whole show?
In the group, there is 10 kids, 5 girls and 5 boys, who are being selected with I don't know how to say it,
there might be a talent search involved.
Yeah, there is a talent search involved. There is 3 steps until they get to the caravan, and they'll be chosen we have tests and we are searching for them, and they have
a choreographer.
Okay. It's a professional choreographer.
Yeah, and a music producer. Who check them and test them, and if they're
so it's the Tzofim version of The Voice, right?
it's something like that.
So they try out and they get chosen. Must be a big honor to be able to do this, no?
Yeah, it is a big honor. Every year there's more than 2,000 people that trying to come to the project, and only 30 of them are going to the Tzofim Friendship Caravan.
Wow. So 30 out of 2,000. Okay.
About that. Yeah.
Wow. So and is it? It's always half boys, half girls. Seems like to me.
In the caravan.
Yeah.
There's five boys and five girls every group.
There every three group. Okay. So there's three groups. They're touring different places. Mm-hmm. Just the United States.
Just in the United States. A few years ago, they had like went to Europe and to different places in around the world. But yeah, it's supposed to be for 3 months in the United States. There are three caravans. We are the coast-to-coast caravan. And there are two more caravans in the United States right now. They're doing the southeast and the northeast.
So the southeast is like greater Florida and a little bit of Georgia and some other places. And the northeast is the tri-state area, New York, Pennsylvania, and then up to Boston and Philadelphia. Okay. It's I have to say it's a great show, full of energy. We'll talk about how that show is put together and a little bit about how these groups work when we come back in a moment with our Sofim representatives here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, is celebrating its first services, classes, and events this summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive synagogue in the foothills in northwest Tucson, Beit Simcha is a congregation that's open to everyone throughout the larger metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha is located at 3001 East Skyline Boulevard on the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell across from La Encantada. We'll be moving over to Oracle Road shortly. Listen up and we'll tell you. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us Friday night at Skyline and Campbell for Shabbat services at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning Torah study, bagels and lox, is at 9 o'clock, followed by Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m., all with me leading them. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, and rich array of summer adult education academy courses, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. That's BeitSimcha, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, or go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me in the newest Jewish community in Southern Arizona and the fastest growing synagogue in Southern Arizona at its exciting beginning stages. We welcome back a randomly occurring Too Jewish segment, Haikus for Jews, our Zen Judaism section. Testing the warm milk on her wrist, she sighs softly, but her son is 40. And another haiku for Jews. The Shiva visit. So sorry about your loss. Now, back to my problems. Those were two classic haikus for Jews. Zen Judaism. Just for you. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about your extraordinary recent trip that you led to Morocco and Spain, the heart of Sfarad, the great Jewish history there. We've talked about Morocco extensively. Spain, which is kind of where it started in a way. Well, not exactly, but the heart
Or where it ended.
Where it ended, for sure.
More accurately. It was interesting to contrast what's left of Jewish life in Casablanca, Marrakesh, Fez, with what's left in what were once the great centers of Sephardic Jewry.
The golden age of
Cordoba, Granada, right. Sevilla. Right. So, I mean, briefly, Granada was the last place to fall. It was the last Muslim holdout. And when it fell in 1492...
The Reconquista was complete.
Right. And Jews and Muslims were expelled. But Granada also features the Alhambra, which is one of the most extraordinary collections of buildings and gardens on earth. And there were a number of people in my group who were very well-traveled who said they had never seen a physical space as beautiful and impressive and really breathtaking as the Alhambra. Also, Granada has, like every other big Spanish city, an area called La Judería, the Jewish quarter.
Yeah.
But no Jews, no community life to speak of, no minyan, no synagogue, no sign of a functioning community life.
It's not, you know, it may have a Judería, but it's not a living Jewish community.
Right. And the same is true, but it's even a greater extreme for Cordoba, because Cordoba was the capital of Sfarad. It produced dozens of luminaries in Jewish history, in Jewish philosophy, in poetry, in medicine, whatever.
Even military leaders, everything.
Right. And the Spaniards are aware of this. There's a wonderful private museum called the Casa Sfarad. Nobody who works there is Jewish, right, because Cordoba essentially has no Jews. But one of the guys who was born on one of the Balearic Islands, I don't know, Mallorca, Ibiza, one of those islands, moved to Cordoba when he was six, says, like every other Spaniard, I don't have any Jewish ancestors as far as I know.
Yeah.
But I do have a grandmother who has this strange habit of lighting candles every Friday afternoon.
And sometimes closing the curtains first.
So you never really know.
Right, right.
And this guy, in order to do his job properly, and because he's a language fanatic and equally fluent in Spanish, French, English, and Hebrew, taught himself enough Hebrew that he can read through the prayer book better than most Jews can. And he ended his tour with a variety of Sephardic melodies, some of which are songs we know, like Esa Einai El Haharim, and some are to like Spanish Jewish folk songs. But he had a beautiful voice, and this non-Jewish Spaniard singing in this space was an almost sacred experience. I mean, people were incredibly moved. And it wasn't until we got to Sevilla, which was the third...
Now, unless I'm mistaken, that space was originally a synagogue, and now it's been transformed into this complicated, really
not,
quite beautiful...
Not so clear. There is a building virtually across the street,
right,
that was originally a synagogue.
For sure. I think they may have both been.
And is now kind of a museum.
Right.
It's not so clear what that Casa Sfarad was, ever.
Okay.
But anyway, the last of the cities deserves special treatment because it has not one but two living Jewish communities, and it's the biggest and most international of those three cities. It's Sevilla, which historically was probably the least important Jewish community, but today it's another story.
So we'll talk about Sevilla next week. Thanks,
Tom. I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Poor Becky is dying. She's on her deathbed. Of course, she gives final instructions to her husband, Abe. Abe, she says, you've been so good to me all these years, so faithful, but now that I'm going, I want you should marry again as soon as possible. I want you to give your new wife all of my expensive clothes. But I can't do that, darling, Abe says. You're a size 12, and she's only a size 6. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well, and keep that size down if you can. We welcome our Shin Shiniyot, Ron Benakot and Rotem Rappaport, our young representatives of Israel. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
So as we're getting close to the end of your tenure here, you know, you've had almost a year, you've had a really good chance to see what American Judaism is like, at least within this community here in Southern Arizona, conservative, reform, other aspects, and Orthodox to a degree, secular, kind of everything. What do you see that you would love to take back to Israel that you don't think is there? And what do you think we should be doing that we're not doing?
So I come from a secular family. My mom, my dad, and my brother were secular. But my grandparents and my uncles and aunts, they're all religious. So I would definitely take this part of like praying more. And I love the way that you sing. You have a lot of like great melodies. I mean, sometimes I just, you know, sing it to myself in the car. yeah. So I'll definitely take that. I'll definitely take some of the traditions that I learned here and some of the foods, like here, for example, when you eat latkes with applesauce.
Yeah.
I never did that in Israel. Like I never did that. And I thought it was pretty cool. So I'll definitely try to take that. That's it. I think everything like that I learned really like, you know, kind of changes you. So I think it's awesome.
It does change and you get used to certain things. And by the way, when you go back, you'll see some differences that you didn't notice.
Right.
Rotem, what do you think? What are your observations right now?
So I think now I look at Judaism like way more in a way of like connecting people together, because in Israel you don't really feel that, because it, like most of the people you meet are Jewish.
Kulanu Yehudim.
Yes. Right. Not everyone, but
not everyone, but it feels that way.
Yes. And you feel it a lot, even if you don't want to, and even if you don't like try to feel it. And here I saw how much it's important for them to keep it, and not just the religious part, but also like the community part, and how they use Judaism to connect the Jewish people together and to do really a Jewish community. So I think I would look at Judaism more of like a connecting part, like a connecting aspect of people. And I would take it like more to my heart, and I would look at like, I would just, every time I go to like this holiday in my house, where usually you like don't think about it and you think about like how the dinner's gonna end and I'm gonna meet my friends, like now I'm gonna really look at it as a, it's awesome to be here with my family and do this holidays and to preserve this Jewish identity that I have.
It is a remarkably different way of establishing Jewish identity.
Yeah.
And you guys are about to go into the army, and the army in Israel is the unifying entity, right? Everybody goes through the army, and it gives you a sense of smaller group community and larger group community, something we don't have here. But you've had kind of an interesting indoctrination into an American Jewish identity.
Well,
we will talk more about your observations about America and Israel when we talk next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And now a word of Torah. This week we chant the dramatic portion of Shlach Lecha from the book of Numbers, the story of the Meraglim, the spies. The Israelites have journeyed to the borders of the Holy Land just a year and a half after leaving Egyptian slavery. Under God's direction, Moses sends 12 spies, one from each tribe, princes of the people, wealthy men of standing, into the land of Canaan to scout out the land, see if it can be captured. The spies take a month to tour the whole land, and they report back to Moses that Canaan is very good, flowing with milk and honey. They even bring back a huge cluster of grapes, so large it must be carried by two men on a pole between them. Now the enduring symbol of Israel's tourism ministry. Everything's gonna be great in Canaan. Only, it's not. 10 of the 12 spies proceed to report that the people of the land are huge. We felt like grasshoppers next to them, they say, and numerous. The cities are heavily fortified and unassailable by the Israelites. They have no chance to capture Canaan in spite of God's support. It's hopeless. Only two spies, Caleb and Joshua, deliver a minority report, saying that with God's help, the land can be taken. But the people are terrified. Again, they ask Moses and Aaron, "Why did you take us from slavery just to kill us here at the hands of our enemies?" And so, at this point, God decides, "This generation of former slaves will never be able to become a free people in its own land. The psychological shackles of slavery are too strong to overthrow in just one generation. They all must remain in the Sinai wilderness until the adults die off and a new, young generation arises that has not known slavery and its defeatist mentality." Stung by the verdict, the people turn again and attempt a leaderless invasion of the land without God's support. It fails dismally. And now the people of Israel are condemned to wander the wilderness for 38 more years, a total of 40 years since they left Egyptian slavery, until a new, young generation can emerge to take the reins and enter the land with a fresh perspective because they have been born into freedom. It's a great lesson in the process required to cleanse the trauma of failure from the minds of a community. Often it's not one single act or great revolution that truly remakes a people or country or organization. It's the generational turn that comes from learning things can be done differently and better, that freedom is a birthright to be defended. In our own lives, we Jews today often share our ancestors' tendency to believe failure is permanent, but success only temporary. Shlach Lecha shows the danger of such belief, the importance of having faith in God and in our own ability to change for the better. So may it be for us. When we return on To Jewish, our guests, Israeli Tzofim leaders Shani Factor and Yonatan Rigby, will tell us how this remarkable program brings Israeli teens in performance to communities all across America. Find out all about it when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Last week, actor John Cusack tweeted an anti-Semitic image and slur and then apologized for what he called a careless mistweet. Unfortunately, for those of us who are fans of the star of Say Anything and The Sure Thing and Gross Point Blank, it was still a pretty nasty thing to have done.
I feel like a young John Cusack, like making big mistakes.
The image that John Cusack tweeted shows a hand in a sleeve with the Star of David on it, crushing a group of people struggling beneath it. It includes the quote, "To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize," and then incorrectly attributes it to the French philosopher Voltaire. The quote is actually from an alt-right neo-Nazi website. Cusack tweeted above the image, "Follow the money." John Cusack, star of High Fidelity, Eight Men Out, Love and Mercy, and many other films, at first said he thought he was retweeting a pro-Palestinian justice post. Later, agreeing that the image was anti-Semitic, he deleted it and his tweets justifying it. The image and fake quote have frequently been posted online by white supremacists and anti-Semites, although in this case, Cusack said he shared it to protest Israeli treatment of Palestinians. In reaction to Palestinian human rights under Israeli occupation, an issue that concerns anyone fighting for justice, I retweeted and quickly deleted an image that's harmful to both Jewish and Palestinian friends, and for that I'm sorry, he wrote. The image depicted a blue Star of David, which I associated with Israel, as their flag uses the same color and shape. I know the star itself is deeply meaningful to Jews, no matter where they stand on Israel's attacks on Palestinians. The insinuation that Jews or Israelis rule over the public discourse and that money is their tool struck many people as blatantly anti-Semitic. Yair Rosenberg, a senior writer at Tablet, wrote, "John Cusack tweeted something blatantly anti-Semitic, thinking it was just anti-Israel. The fact that in 2019 a celebrity can openly share anti-Jewish stuff like this and genuinely think it's politically okay tells you a lot about why Israel became necessary and remains so." In other news, in Jerusalem, Ilan Carr, America's envoy against anti-Semitism, said that armed guards should be posted at every synagogue, Jewish school, and Jewish community center across the United States. "We live in a time of danger," Carr said last week at the Global Coalition for Israel conference. "Any synagogue, every JCC should have guards. God willing, may they never be needed, but they should be there." Carr was interviewed live on stage by the Jerusalem Post's editor-in-chief, Yaakov Katz. Carr, 50 years old, is a Hebrew-speaking former L.A. prosecutor and a U.S. Army veteran who served in Iraq. He's also a past Supreme Master of AAPI Fraternity. He was appointed in February to be the State Department's envoy for anti-Semitism, filling a post that was empty for 2 years despite protests from lawmakers and Jewish groups. The position, most recently held by Ira Forman under President Barack Obama, has existed since 2004. Ilan Carr told the audience that President Donald Trump is fully committed to fighting anti-Semitism in the U.S. and around the world. The rhetoric of the president couldn't be clearer. Every time the president speaks on this issue, he calls it anti-Semitism, a vile poison that must be rooted out, Carr said. He added that Trump has explicitly stated, if you go after the Jews, we're coming after you. Said the battle against anti-Semitism must be a joint, bipartisan fight. All decent people, Jewish and not Jewish, need to do it together. I don't care what ideological clothing it wears, Jew hatred is Jew hatred. We need to fight it and oppose it, and that's got to be the message. From the Middle East, Egypt will pay a $500 million fine to Israel for backing out of an agreement to provide natural gas to Israel, following jihadist attacks on the pipeline in the northern part of the Sinai Peninsula. Under the deal, Egypt pays the fine over 8.5 years to the state-owned Israel Electric Corporation. The fine was cut from $1.7 billion in a settlement agreement reached last week. That fine was part of a 2015 arbitration decision by the International Chamber of Commerce. At the time the gas supply was cut off, Egypt was supplying Israel with more than 40% of its natural gas needs in order to produce electricity cleanly. Terrorists blew up the gas line 3 times during the first 6 months of 2011. Egypt canceled gas exports to Israel in 2012. Selling gas to Israel was unpopular among Egyptians after the opening of the pipeline back in 2008. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, deposed in early 2011, was accused of giving Israel a sweetheart deal on the gas agreement, signed back in 2005. And in our department, of the more things change, the more they stay the same. Last week, Israeli soldiers protecting southern Israel from attacks from Gaza dug up a watchtower inside their firing zone. What was unique is that that watchtower goes back 2,800 years. It's from King Hezekiah's time. It was built so that the soldiers of Judah could keep an eye on the Philistine enemy army in Gaza. That watchtower was excavated by the IDF in cooperation with archaeologists. It communicated with other similar military fortifications of the day by smoke and fire. Smoke during the day, fire at night. And today, almost 3,000 years later, Jewish soldiers are watching the same exact area from the same exact location, protecting their country from attack from Gaza. Amazing. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. To welcome back our guests, here are the Israeli Tzofim, the Scouts, singing a bit of their Yiddish song, Oy Mame.
Oy Mame, binichfalit. Oy Mame, binichfalit. Ekleizmer ingel mame gitraye, licht mir nor in zin. Oy Mame, binichfalit.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our representatives of the Tzofim, the Israeli Scouts Caravan, that's touring three different groups, as we learned in the first part of the show, around the United States, representing Israel in a wonderful way, Shani Factor and Yonatan Rigby. So were you named for Eleanor Rigby? I have to ask you that. No, okay. Not related, okay. It was Paul McCartney who was not inspired by your family name. But the names of the groups, of the touring groups, are actually named for famous Israeli singers. Tell us a little bit about that, because there's three groups. You said five boys, five girls on each, 10, plus, I assume, other madrichim, leaders like you guys, making sure that the kids are well taken care of and do all the right things. Tell us about the names of the groups and how those evolved.
Okay, so every year the Madrichim choose names for the caravans. This year we decided to give the stage to three great Israeli singers, Nomi Shemer, Igal Bashan, and Ehud Manor. So it's Manor, Bashan, and Shemer, and Manor is our group, the Coast to Coast. Yeah, they're amazing.
So coast to coast means every place that's not the Southeast and the Northeast. These are great Israeli singers, but they're not named for singers every year. They're called different things at different times, right?
Correct.
Is there any competition between the groups?
That's a good question.
Healthy competition.
A healthy competition. To be the best, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think there is competition between the groups. I think it's more like a healthy competition. Everyone wants to be the best. So everyone is helping each other to get to the top. And that's it. You know, they're teenagers, so everyone have competition somewhere, but they're good.
I have to say, they're such energetic, wonderful kids. It's a high-energy show. There's one choreographer for all the groups, right? They all learn the same routines. How long is the show itself that you put on?
It's about an hour, the show. It depends on where we're going to, where the performance are happening, because it depends if we are in a JCC or in a day school, if you're doing a show for kids or for more adults. It depends.
So you change it a little
bit.
Yeah,
right? We have like different lineups.
Do the kids have any voice? I mean, obviously they sing, their voices we hear, but do they have any input in the kind of songs that are chosen or the dances?
Actually, it's quite interesting because we want Americans to say what they want to hear. Huh. So every year there's a survey that goes out, and then the audiences can affect the show, and they can say what they want, what they liked, what they disliked. And then there's a whole professional team in Israel that sits down and writes the best, directs the best show and the scenes and which music to put inside.
And it's kind of a high-tech production, too. I mean, you pre-recorded tracks, and there's a whole kind of a stage that you create. So you have to schlep that stuff along with you, right?
So we're actually driving a van for, of course, the 10 kids and the two of us, and a U-Haul behind us with all of the things we carry. It seems very small, but inside there's a lot. So that's how we're driving.
So the performances, you do a lot of performances, but obviously you're not performing all day. What happens in between? What are the other activities that the Sofim are involved in while they're here?
All right. So like you said, we don't perform every day. It depends. We have about between 60 to 80 shows during the summer. And in the meantime, we have days off with the hosting families. We've been hosted by hosting families. And we have educational activities that we're doing for kids in the JCC or in the schools and everything. And that's what we're offering except the show. And except that the kids are 16 and 17 years old, so they came to see America. So that's a part of it.
How many of these kids, they're all still high school kids, right?
Yes.
So they have another year of high school when they go back?
Yeah, they're coming back to Israel in August, and then they have the last year in high school. And after that, they are going to the IDF.
And, you know, we've had Shin Shiniyot and Shin Shinim here frequently in our community who are young representatives. They're people doing a gap year. These kids are not doing a gap year. They're doing it in their summer break, right? So it's just part of their high school experience?
So they actually, they're leaving Israel right after two big finals in math and in English. And then they miss a lot of tests, and they'll have to do them alone by themselves during the next year.
Wow. So they have to make up whatever they missed.
Mm-hmm. But it's worth it.
what's the biggest surprise that you've had in your experience in America, traveling around, being madrichim for the Sofim? What surprised you more than anything else?
The amount of Israelis here. We came from LA now, from the West Coast and the San Francisco area. The amount of Israelis here, it's crazy. And we've actually spoken more Hebrew than English for the past month. But they're amazing. And it's different to come to an Israeli community or a Jewish community.
And, you know, it's funny because for Israelis, of course, this is a great connection that they don't get in America. The songs, I want to go back to the music a little bit. You know, a lot of American Jews know Israeli songs from the period of the names of your groups, you know, from 1970 or something or earlier. That's not the stuff you guys perform, really. Tell us how that's chosen and how you decide what to do, because there's so much great Israeli music now.
Yeah, so there's a few songs that are classics, like Jerusalem of Gold, that we perform with that song. We have the Scout song, that's every year we have the Scout song. And we're doing the show this year is a bit different than last year. We're trying to make it a more song that people know, that will kids and people are my age and Shani's age that will probably know the songs. For example, we have the song Toy, that is the song who won the Eurovision song.
Yeah, Eurovision Championship, which is why Eurovision was in Israel.
Yeah, exactly. So we have the song that won the competition,
right?
For example. And we're trying to...
Now that's a tricky song because, you know, it's got a rap, it's got some production going on.
We have to come to the show to see it.
But the kids does it really good. They do it really good.
Did the kids ever not like one of the pieces? Do they have that possibility?
I don't think they don't like. I think they like the whole every song. Right. There's one song that is in Yiddish.
Oh, really?
It's a bit difficult to sing, but they practice
what's
a lot.
What's the song in Yiddish?
How it's called?
Yeah.
Whoa, Ho Mame. Ho Mame? Yeah.
Hoi Mame.
Hoi Mame.
Vinich Farlicht.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. How did they decide to do Yiddish song? I'm delighted but surprised.
There is a musical producer in Israel that help us with all of our song, especially with the Yiddish song, because we don't know Yiddish, and they get trained really hard to know this song by heart, to know everything, you know.
I think you're going to have American kids jealous because they can't be in the Sofim caravan, because it seems like it's so much fun. When you come to a place and you have some extra time, do the Sofim connect with other scouts here, either Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or Jewish scouting organizations? How do they manage? How do you guys manage that? Is that something that you can arrange?
Yes, we're happy. I mean, in every community we arrive, we have someone that tells us, like, what's the schedule, when is the show, because, like, that's our main thing. Like, that's our way to connect.
The show is the big performance.
Yeah,
right?
That's our way to connect. That's the tool that helps us, like, be closer to these people and learn about each other's lives. And then in the middle, we're more than happy if someone asks us to do something or meet people or mingle. We're very good at mingling.
How many performances will you do in the course of, say, your C2C tour?
About 70 shows.
Wow. It's like a Broadway tour. You're 70 shows. Are any of them better than others? What makes a show better for you all?
That's a good question.
All right. So most of the shows are really... energetic, like you said, and some of them are more emotional. When we had a performance for Holocaust survivors, and it was really special, you know. And we had a show for kids in school, and it depends. But every show is special, and we try to fit the show for the right audience, and that's about it, I guess.
How did you guys end up in these jobs?
All right. So me and Shani, we were in this project. I was in 2012. Shani was in 2013. We were like the kids right now. And we fell in love in the project. And we went to the army and we came back from the army and we said, that's what we're going to do. We want to be leaders in this amazing project.
Was it difficult to get chosen for that job?
We had like a, how do you say it?
You had an angle? You had a way in? Or?
It's also three steps, three interviews.
You didn't have to sing and dance to perform to get in?
luckily, no. We just have to talk.
We have to talk a lot and talk about ourselves.
Do you have to be a Gingy to get in? I'm just curious.
I'm not a redhead.
No, no.
I'm blonde as well. Blonde and blue eyes.
Yeah, blonde and blue-eyed, okay. So maybe not really a gingy, but, you know.
Polish.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's other people with blue eyes around too. It's okay. Other Jews. When you go back, when you return to Israel, do you now go and start looking for the next group? Do you stay in this job? What do you guys do?
I'm going to go to school.
Ah.
I'm going to start university, which is kind of late for Americans. But for us, it's usually the amount of time because people get off the army and then go travel, do something, and then they start university. So I'm enrolled to Be'er Sheva University, Ben-Gurion.
Ben-Gurion, yeah. Which has grown tremendously. It's become a really good university.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I served in the army for 5 years. I was a communication officer, and they taught me a few things that will probably be helpful for the Ministry of Defense. So I'm going to be there for 1 year.
Back at the Ministry of Defense?
Yeah. Of communication, underground communication.
And then
save some money, probably for that year, and then I'm going to study as well at one of the universities.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
When the kids come back, they go back to school, right? And
yes.
They catch up on their schooling. Mm-hmm. It must be a weird... Is it a difficult transition for them? I mean, here they've been kicking around the United
Superstars.
States. Superstars. Yeah, they're superstars. They've been getting applause every night. Different locations, 70 shows. How hard is it to go back to life?
It's tough. I mean, you miss it a lot. You miss home when you're here. You think about home. You think about your family. You think about your friends. And then you get there, and the only thing you want to do is talk to your caravan members and be back with them. It's hard because, you know, you get a taste of a different world. You get a taste of people, of... religions, you get a taste of everything, and then you go back to the same place, to the same friends, which maybe did some cool things over the summer, but you changed the world. I mean, so it's hard, but they manage.
I hope you guys keep on changing the world. Where can people go to find out more about Sofim and about the whole caravan? What's the website? What's the place to go? Where do we find out?
So you can find us up on Facebook and on Instagram at Coast to Coast Caravan.
Oh, also, by the way, there's a lot of YouTube cuts that are available, I should tell you.
All right. But our main thing is on Facebook and
Facebook
on
Instagram. I'm old-fashioned.
Don't forget to do a like. And we also have shows here in Tucson. And we have a show tomorrow morning at the JCC. And we have shows all across the country. And... if you can find us up again, I said it again, in Facebook on Instagram, you can send us a text and we'll let you know where our next show.
Sounds great. Thank you very much, Yonatan and Shani. It's been great, and continue have a wonderful trip, a great tour, and I hope we catch up with you guys again.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out from the Sofim.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Dina Rabban, CEO of the new Jewish YouTube channel called Unpacked. Our playout this morning comes, of course, from the Tzofim, our Israeli scout guests today. Their version of the Eurovision winning song from 2018, Toy. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Care about your modern time preachers. Welcome, boys, too much noise. I will teach you. Bum, bum, bow. Bum, bum, bow. Hey, I think you forgot how to play. My teddy bear's running away. The Bobby got something to say. Hey, 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 hey.
My Simon says leave me alone. I'm taking my Pikachu home. You're stupid just like you're smart. Oh.
Wonder Woman, don't you ever forget. You're divine.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.